राम राम हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जय कृष्ण जय राम श्याम सुंदर जय गोरनिका हरे गोरनिका हरे गोरनिका जय गोरनिका जय जय प्रभु
परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्र सते स्तुवान् ग्रेस भय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय। श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। निताय गौ प्रेमानंदे। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, Text 20. Karmana eva hi samsiddhim asthitaha जनक आदयः लोक संग्रहम् एव अपि संपश्यन् कर्तुम् अर्हसि कर्मणैव हि संसिद्धिम् आस्थिता जनकादयः लोक संग्रहमेवापि संपश्यन् कर्तुम् अर्हसि कर्मणैव हि संसिद्धिम् आस्थिता जनकादयः लोक संग्रहमेवापि संपश्यन् कर्तुम् अर्हसि कर्मणैव हि संसिद्धिम् आस्थिता जनकादयः लोक संग्रहम् एवापि संपश्यन् कर्तुम् अर्हसि
कर्मणैव हि संसिद्धिम् आस्थिता जनकादयः
कर्मणा बाय वर्क एव इवन ही सर्टेनली संसिद्धिम इन परफेक्शन आस्थिताः सिचुएटेड जनक आदयः जनक एंड अदर किंग्स लोक संग्रहम द पीपल इन जनरल एव अपि ऑल्सो संपश्यन कंसिडरिंग कर्तुम टू एक्ट अर्हसि यू डिजर्व Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Kings such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Purport. Kings like Janaka were all self-realized souls. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform the prescribed duties in the Vedas. Nonetheless, they performed all prescribed duties just to set examples for the people in general. Janaka was the father of Sita and father-in-law of Lord Sri Ram. Being a great devotee of the Lord, he was transcendentally situated. But because he was the king of Mithila, a subdivision of Bihar province in India, he had to teach his subjects how to perform prescribed duties. Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal friend, had no need to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but they fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, every effort was made to avoid the war. even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the other party was determined to fight. So for such a right cause, there is a necessity for fighting. Although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the public how to live and how to act. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow, and this is explained in the following verse. Kindly repeat the translation. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Having described the process of sacrifice or yajna, and stated that for human life, sacrifice is essential, and only by performance of sacrifice can one attain the purpose of life. Life has meaning only by performing sacrifice, not otherwise, because a life lived otherwise is a life in vain. Mogham parthasa jivati, as Krishna explains in earlier, the one who lives indriya aramaha only for the satisfaction of his senses lives in vain. Mogha, uselessly. His life is wasted. One who is taking pleasure in the self, not in the outside objects of the senses, he is situated on the spiritual platform. And he has no external prescribed duties to perform. At the same time, he has no reason to not perform such duties also. So therefore, he performs such prescribed duties for the sake of educating everyone else, although he has really no need to do so. Because he is transcendentally situated, he is beyond either being required to perform his prescribed duties or avoiding his prescribed duties. And therefore he continues to work without attachment to the fruits of his actions. The difference between human life and animal life is that there is some regulation in human life. And the regulation is that we act according to certain codes. We have certain prescribed duties. Everyone. Any human society that doesn't require a human being to act in certain ways is not a human society. The closer our set of guidelines for human behavior are in accordance with what the Lord has created for us, the more human we actually become. Otherwise, we are more and more animalistic. Prescribed duties are meant for the achieving of a higher purpose, of a spiritual purpose. Because prescribed duties implies some restrictions. It is an imposition. The living entities in this world are here for the purpose of enjoyment, to exercise a false sense of independence. They want to do whatever they like, anytime they like, anyhow they like. They simply want to act according to their impulses, just like a child. If you study the behavior of a child, you will know exactly what it means to act simply on the basis of the whims of the mind and the senses. A child's mind is very fickle, and therefore it goes from one object to the other, and the child is acting solely for its own pleasure, without consideration of any rules or regulations, no restrictions, no prohibitions, no do's and don'ts. Animals are also like that. We are seeing so many monkeys here, we notice that. They have no concept of time, place and circumstance. They can do anything, anywhere, anyhow. There is no morality, there is no regulations for them. So because this is the nature of the conditioned living entity, therefore this is his disease, because he doesn't want to surrender to Krishna and serve Krishna. In order to rectify him of his diseased mentality, certain restrictions are required, certain rules and regulations are required. Just as a patient has to follow the restrictions imposed by the physician or the doctor in order to get cured. So therefore, in order to free oneself from bad tendencies, one follows prescribed duties, even though one may not like them sometimes. The conditioned living entity, and this is an important point, likes to follow the path of least resistance, the easiest path to do anything, the most convenient path to the senses. Whatever the mind and senses dictate at that point in time, that is the tendency of the living entity to act in that way. We all have the experience. Suppose we are waking up for Mangalarti. The mind sometimes will say, well, what's the need now? We're so tired. Let's go back to sleep. So we have to exercise our intelligence. No, now we must get up. Or you're chanting your rounds. Sleep is threatening to overcome our consciousness. So we have to use our intelligence and become determined to avoid that and to concentrate on the holy name. Even in spiritual life, we have so many prescribed duties, and it is a constant struggle for devotees, for sadhakas, to stick to these prescribed duties and avoid deviating from them as the mind dictates. So it is very easy to take the path of least resistance. When you're chanting and mind says, if you feel sleepy, you go to sleep. It's convenient. You don't have to struggle. We just simply go to sleep. That's the tendency. Least resistance. No trouble there. No botheration. But the intelligence dictates, no, no. Even though it's a botheration, still continue chanting. Don't sleep. So prescribed duties means that it goes against the tendency of the conditioned living entity to take the path of least resistance, to take the easy path out. So prescribed duties means that we sometimes do things that may appear difficult or unpalatable. We may have to get up early in the morning in winters. We may have to cook in the hot kitchen in the hot summers. So many things are there. Prabhupada gives so many examples of these things. So prescribed duties are necessary to bring discipline and regulation in the life of a human being, without which a higher goal cannot be achieved. Even for materialistic pursuits, one needs to have some regulation. Just imagine the lives of athletes and Olympic sports people. in order to achieve that Olympic gold medal, how much they have to regulate their lives, how much they have to suffer and torture their body and their mind. It is a tremendous struggle. So although that pursuit has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, but still because they are convinced of that goal, so they do it. Subject themselves to tremendous inconvenience. They also rise before Brahma Muhurta. They also do their exercises, their jogging, whatever they have to do, way ahead before anyone else gets up. And that's how they're able to accomplish a goal. So also spiritually, that is called tapasya, austerity. So austerities doesn't necessarily mean only physical austerities. Even the fact that we are simply following the prescribed duties that are expected of us in our various positions in life is itself an austerity, especially in Kali Yuga, when nobody wants to follow any prescribed duties. There are prescribed duties for a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. There are prescribed duties for a husband, for a wife, for a son, for a daughter, for a father, mother. Prescribed duties for everyone in every situation of life. And each prescribed duty is in one sense a botheration. Because it's an imposition on the mind to do something we may sometimes not want to do. But still we do. And therefore, by the continued austerity of sticking to one's prescribed duties, one achieves success. Success is ultimately got by those who persevere in performance of prescribed duties. Just as if we just persevere to chant the holy name, despite the fact that the mind may give trouble, there may be so many disturbances and ups and downs in life, we just go ahead, go on and on and on with tolerance, with perseverance, success will be ours at the end. So there are material prescribed duties, or rather prescribed duties in the platform of the body, and there are prescribed duties in the platform of the soul. Both swadharmas exist. And both must be performed. We cannot artificially reject the swadharma on the platform of the body unless one is on that platform. So here Krishna is explaining that of the two kinds of swadharma, the material swadharma, let us call it so for convenience, the swadharmas that have to deal with the varnashram situation, with the condition, the psychophysical nature of the body, Krishna says those duties also must necessarily be performed even if one is situated on the spiritual swadharma platform. That is, one actually doesn't need to do these platform, these activities. But still one does it. And then he gives the example of King Janak and others, and other great kings in history, Rajarishis, who simply by performance of prescribed duties achieve perfection. Of course, performing prescribed duties according to the Varnashram system is very difficult nowadays, but in earlier days, people used to do it in natural course, and one could achieve very, very elevated positions simply by doing that. For example, it is said that if someone very meticulously performed his prescribed duties for 100 lifetimes, continuously, without a fault, he could achieve the position of Brahma. Just imagine, just do your prescribed duties according to your varna and your ashram perfectly for 100 lifetimes, and you become the chief living entity in this universe. What a great exalted position to achieve from a material point of view. The highest position you can ever hope to achieve, materially speaking. So by performance of prescribed duties, many things could be achieved. It is in fact one of the acts of piety to just continue doing these activities. So these prescribed duties according to Varnashram, they can elevate us. At the same time, if one doesn't consider the spiritual objective behind the performance of these prescribed duties, then one will be misled. One's performance of prescribed duties will ultimately be in vain because one will remain within the material world.
ఆ బ్రహ్మ భువనాలోక పునః ఆవర్తినో అర్జున మాం ఉపేత్యతు కౌంతేయ పునర్జన్మన విద్యతే.
సో ఈవెన్ వన్ ఇఫ్ వన్ అచీవ్స్ బ్రహ్మస్ పొజిషన్ బై పర్ఫార్మింగ్ వన్స్ ప్రిస్క్రైబ్ డ్యూటీస్ ఫర్ 100 లైఫ్ టైమ్స్ పర్ఫెక్ట్లీ, వన్ విల్ స్టిల్ కమ్ బ్యాక్ టు దిస్ మర్త్యలోక, టు దిస్ ఎర్త్ ప్లానెట్ ఇవెన్చువలీ, ఇఫ్ వన్ ఇస్ నాట్ అ డివోటీ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్. దేర్ఫోర్ చైతన్య మహాప్రభు ఇన్ హిస్ కాన్వర్సేషన్ విత్ రామానంద రాయ్ rejected Ramananda Rai's suggestion that the Varnashram system, following the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system, performing one's prescribed duties, was the ultimate goal of life. He said, Eho bahya ar aage kaho ar. This is external. Go on speaking. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not mean to minimize the Varnashrama system. He didn't want to say that one should not perform one's prescribed duties according to Varna in Ashram. But what he was saying was that the performance of these prescribed duties must always be seen in relationship to our ultimate goal of life, which is Krishna consciousness. One cannot be whimsical either way. One, by saying I'm performing prescribed duties, I don't have to bother about the spiritual objective. And the second, that, well, I am following Krishna consciousness, so I don't have to follow any prescribed duties according to Varna and Ashram. Either is not appropriate for a sadhaka, for a devotee. When one follows the prescribed duties, the Vishnu Puran says it is as good as attaining Vishnu. If one sees it like that, but still, in order to get Krishna prem, to get pure love of God, one has to do some positive spiritual activity also. Simply dovetailing one's prescribed duties is not sufficient. Positive spiritual activities means like chanting the holy name, the 9 processes of bhakti in short. Kings in the past, like King Janak, they performed their prescribed duties for many lives, and they achieve the platform of self-realization. But in order to set an example for the world at large, they continue to perform their prescribed duties. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that King Janak was a great devotee of the Lord. Otherwise, how could he have attained the position of father-in-law of God Himself? Father or father-in-law is a very exalted position in the sense that it's considered superior. So he was in a superior position to the Lord, like his father. So how could anyone but a great devotee of the Lord achieve such a good fortune? The Lord doesn't give the fortune of having such intimate relationships to anyone and everyone. He would only allow his most dear and near devotees to play such roles in this world. And because King Janak had daughters who were to get married, he very faithfully did the whole ceremony. He had this whole competition that he organized, that there was a bow of Lord Shiva which he had inherited through generations of King Janaks. Actually, Janak was a title. All the kings in his line were called Janak. But this particular King Janak, who was the father of Sita Devi, his name was... Does anyone know his name? Sita Devi's father Janak, what is his name? Janak is the title. Videharaj is also a title, the king of Videha, Videha province. Shiradhvaja, his name was Shiradhvaja. So he had 2 daughters. What were his daughters' names? One at least you should know. Sita. Sita Devi was one. Who was the other? Urmila. So,
when Vishwamitra Muni had taken Lord Ram and Lakshman out from a heartbroken King Dasharath, and he had taken them out for the purpose of killing some Rakshasas and Asuras who were disrupting the peaceful lives of the ascetics like King Vishwamitra and others. Then Vishwamitra Muni eventually, he had a role to play in the plan of the Lord to unite the eternal consort of the Lord with the Lord himself. So then he said, well, there is a Swayamvara ceremony, there is a competition being organized by King Janak of Mithila, and he has a very beautiful young daughter, is very qualified, and we should go there to win her hand in marriage. And in obedience to the command of Vishwamitra Muni, Lord Ram went there along with Lakshman, and there was a huge bow. So you know the story of the bow was so huge that it took 5,000 men to pull it on a cart, and still they had great difficulty. And no one else could even lift the bow. All the suitors who came there couldn't lift the bow. But Lord Ram not only lifted the bow, he strung it and broke it as easily as an elephant breaks a stick of sugar cane. So it was so easy for Lord Ram. And when Lord Ram cracked the bow, there was such a deafening sound that Valmiki Muni describes in the Ramayana that except for King Janak, Vishwamitra Muni and Lord Ram and Lakshman, practically everybody else just fell to the ground, almost unconscious because of this huge deafening sound. So anyway, this, he performed his prescribed duty and the bow was broken. This reminds me of a small story I heard from one devotee. Of course, it's not exactly relevant to the theme, but since we are on the topic of the bow, I can relate this little story. That one time in one school in India, one school inspector from the government, he was visiting different schools. So he went to this particular school, and all the boys in the school were called into the hall, and then the inspector was addressing the students. All the students were there, the teachers were there, the headmaster was there. And in the course of the discussion, the inspector asked the boys, so have you all read Ramayana? So everyone said, yes sir, we have read Ramayana. Very good. So now tell me, who broke the bow of Lord Shiva? There was a silence. And then suddenly one boy put up his hand, said, yes, sir, I didn't break it. I never broke it. So the inspector was shocked. So he looked at the teacher. So one of the teachers. So the teacher was, suddenly his teacher stood up. Don't believe him, sir. I know he is the one who has done it. I know he must be the one who has done it. So the inspector was even more shocked. So now he looked at the headmaster for an answer. And the headmaster was really puzzled what to say. Then he said finally, sir, please don't mind. Whatever it is, we'll adjust it in our school budget. It's okay. So that was quite a joke on the educational system that, you know, nowadays especially, teachers and cheaters, it's becoming similar. So Prabhupada decried the modern educational system where there is no spiritual education given to the children. So anyway, then he also performed the marriage ceremony. He proposed, actually King Shiradhvaja Janak proposed, that the other two sons of Dasharatha Maharaj should also get married to the daughters of his younger brother. So Lord Ram got married to Sita Devi, Lord Lakshman got married to Urmila Devi. And who were the other two brothers of Lord Ram? Bharat and Shatrughna. And what was the name of King Janak's younger brother? King Janak was Shiradhvaj. What is his younger brother's name? We've all read Ramayana, right? His name was Kushadhvaja. And Kushadhvaja's two daughters, the elder one married Bharat and the younger one married Shatrughna. So now you know the next question. What is the next question? What are their names? Mandavi. Mandavi married whom? Bharat. And the other daughter? Who married Shatrughna? Shrutakirti. Shrutakirti. So King Janak went through the whole formalities and the rituals of the whole thing with all the formalities that go with it. And there was so much, the Vedic process was so elaborate. When they all got together, the two families, each family would recite its own lineage to show that they were coming from a respectable background. And so King Janak was doing all his worldly duties very perfectly. Although he was a self-realized soul, he had no purpose, he had no real reason to do all these formalities in life. He could easily have just gone to the forest, given up his kingdom. But he knew that he had to set the example. Loka sangraham. So therefore here Krishna says that kings like King Janak and others, all these Raja Rishis, karmana eva hi sansiddhim, they achieve perform the perfection in life by performance of their prescribed duties. Asthita janakadayah. Then they were situated on perfection, the platform of perfection. But nevertheless, loka sangraham, just for the sake of the people in general, considering sampashyan, they did everything in life. So also must you, O Arjuna, Krishna is saying. Just for the sake of educating the people in general and setting the proper example for them, you must perform prescribed duties. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that even Krishna and Arjuna themselves perform the prescribed duty of fighting. Arjuna was a Kshatriya. Krishna was also playing the part of a Kshatriya. Of course, Krishna's example is very unique because in Vrindavan he was playing the part of a Vaishya, because a Vaishya's activities are rearing cattle, taking care of cows, tilling the land and so on. Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam Vaishya Karma Svabhavajam. So Krishna was, he's Gopal, he was looking after the cows in Vrindavan. So that's the work of a Vaishya. But in Dwarka and Mathura, he was not a Vaishya. He was a Kshatriya. So Shishupal even was very confused about Krishna's identity. So the Rajasuya sacrifice, when he was blaspheming Krishna like anything, this was one of the points he made. That who knows what is the varna of this Krishna? You are all saying that he is fit to receive the Agra Puja, or the Puja as being the foremost person, the most worshipable person, worthy of deserving worship. But one doesn't even know what is his caste. What is his varna? Is he a Vaishya? Is he a Kshatriya? What is he? Actually, Shishupal was right. Why? In a sense, not in the way that he meant it, but he was right that Krishna didn't belong to any caste. Why? Because he's beyond the varnas, he's beyond the ashrams. Krishna has nothing to do with the varnashram system except that he has created it for us. Chatur varnyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashah. This chatur varnyam is four varnas, the system of four varnas and the ashramas by implication also. Krishna says is maya srishtam. It is my creation. Krishna is never entangled in his own creation. He is never subject to the limitations that his creations impose upon the conditioned living entities within the creation. So he has nothing to do with the varnashrama system. And yet, when he comes into this world, he also acts as if he were a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or whatever, according to the situation. That's his pastime. For Krishna, it is called Leela. For us, it is called prescribed duty. Prescribed duty means you don't have a choice. But Leela means it's Krishna's sweet will. But still Krishna performed it very dutifully. As a Vaishya, every day he would go out without fail. He would never miss a single day to go out for the cows, with the cows. And he would make sure that they were grazing properly and taken care of nicely. Similarly, as a Kshatriya, he performed his duties perfectly. Then as a householder also, he performed his duties perfectly. He was with every single queen at the same time, and he kept every single queen completely satisfied. He performed all his religious duties as a Grihastha, worshipping the fire, touching sacred water, giving charity to the Brahmanas, chanting the Gayatri Mantra, and many, many other things we read in the Krishna book. So there was no need for him to fight, really speaking. Yes, it was Krishna who really used Arjuna as an instrument to destroy the enemies. It was Krishna who was like the wind that caused the friction between the hard twig-like, branch-like demoniac kings of the world who rubbed against each other, and the friction caused a fire which burnt them all. So Krishna arranged this battle of Kurukshetra so that all these demoniac kings could ultimately kill each other and lessen the burden on the earth. And he used Arjuna as his chief instrument to do that. So in any case, Krishna was the doer. He was the one who accomplished everything there on the battle of Kurukshetra. But externally, it didn't appear so. Externally, he used so many other instruments. But even externally, Krishna could have been the sole cause. Just a wave of his hand, just a thought, and he could have just reduced the whole armies to ashes in 1 second. But still, Krishna had to play the role of a Kshatriya. So he was there as a charioteer, and Arjuna was there to fight. So Krishna also does this to set the example. And this we will see in the verses to come. And Prabhupada mentions here, but Krishna and Arjuna fought to teach the principle to the rest of the world that sometimes when good arguments fail, then fighting is necessary. That is a Kshatriya principle. A Kshatriya by nature is fond of war. He likes to fight. His fingers are always itching to fight the good fight. Like there was Kartavir Arjuna. He had 1,000 arms. He didn't know what to do, whom to fight with. So he would go and break rocks, he would break mountains, he would do everything. He stopped the flow of the Narmada, tried to do so many things. And even the other warriors we read of, they were always eager to go into battle. But they would not uselessly fight. They would usually fight on grounds of religion, on dharma. So now when Krishna and Arjuna realized that good arguments have failed, then there was need for violence, so they fought to teach this principle that violence is sometimes necessary. And Prabhupada also explains at the end of how a devotee should act in this world. Prabhupada says, although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the public how to live and how to act. Experienced persons of Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow. And this is explained in the following verse. The following verse, of course, is the famous Yad Yad Acharati Shrestas verse. So as devotees also, we must set the example for the rest of the world. Even simple things like proper behavior in public. When we are going out on the street, when we are out on the railway trains, for every small thing, even inside our temple, we have the public coming in. We have to set the proper example. Otherwise, people will be dissuaded from the path of religion. They will lose faith. Even amongst each other, what to speak of setting an example for the public, it is our duty to set an example to each other also. By performing our duties in Krishna consciousness very diligently, and by acting very compassionately and properly. So as devotees, we must be even more particular, because then our actions may determine how the faith of other people is affected in Krishna consciousness. Alright, so we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Question is that instead of simply trying to give the name of Krishna to people in their positions, whatever they are in, will it not be better to create a varnashrama system so that they can take to Krishna consciousness? Both things are required. In this Kali Yuga, to bring back the society to the original varnashrama system is practically impossible. At the same time, some effort should be made at least to create some Brahmanas and maybe some Kshatriyas. And Vaishyas are there, that's Vaishyavati is very strong. But to have good Brahmanas and then under their guidance to have at least a few good Kshatriyas is very necessary for the society. Then everything can go on peacefully. So Prabhupada said many times that I want to first create Brahmanas. Brahmana means Brahma Janati Iti Brahmana, one who understands his absolute truth, not just one who is simply born in a so-called Brahmana family. So we do both simultaneously. We understand that the process of creating a Varnashram system is very time-consuming, very difficult from a practical point of view in this degraded age. So we can't waste time, we can't wait. So we give them the message. Give them the process, the chanting the holy name in whatever situation. One may be most fallen, but still, nevertheless, chant. People are devoid of sanskars in this age, but nevertheless, chant the holy name. By simply chanting, you can overcome all the defects of your birth and lack of sanskars and everything. But it is a fact also that taking to Krishna consciousness without sanskars, if the fire of Krishna consciousness is not strong enough, if we are not really intense in our devotional service, then that lack of sanskars also causes havoc. So we can see also, for example, that if people take to Krishna consciousness, but they are not so strong in their spiritual practice, so they have some affinity for Krishna consciousness, but they still do many immoral things, past bad habits. So they have two faces. They are devotees, they want to do things, but at the same time they do things that are immoral, right? Sanskars are bad and the bhakti is not strong enough to overcome that. So yes, in order to stabilize and perpetuate and to intensify the devotional process, Varnashram must be in place, in the sense that at least the sanskars must be there. That is a strong foundation in which Krishna consciousness can flourish and prosper. Without good sanskaras, it may cause havoc. That's why in the end of the first chapter, Arjuna is saying so many things, right? Any other questions? Yes.
Duties are performed without the support of bhakti, will they give the result as expected from them?
If the prescribed duties are performed without the support of bhakti, then will they give the results? To a certain extent, they will give material results. To the extent that you perform them dutifully, it will give some material result. But in this Kali Yuga, to perform prescribed duties properly is extremely difficult. Prescribed duties performed according to the scriptures, very difficult. If we were all to hear what it means to perform prescribed duties according to the Varnashram system in this age, I'm sure we would all faint. Practically very difficult. What we do in this day and age is just a small, teeny weeny portion of what prescribed duties are supposed to be done in the Varnashram system. There's practically no hope that anyone in this age can follow everything that is said of prescribed duties in the earlier ages. So better to just perfect our Krishna consciousness, do your prescribed duties, follow Varnashram to the extent that it facilitates Krishna consciousness, not independent of that. The devotional process integrates with Varnashram when we select those rules and regulations from the Varnashram system that help us to become more Krishna conscious, that facilitate our Krishna consciousness individually and collectively. So we are not so much concerned about the other so-called prescribed duties, which may be very difficult to do in Kali Yuga. Yes.
I missed. I'm sorry, I was late. But the question that I wanted to address is that when it is said that when Mother Teresa of Calcutta was leaving her body, she said that my doubt will be finally extinguished. Obviously, externally, it seems that following a certain path, God has spent 65 years or 60 years of life, still had, just like Jesus Christ on the cross also said, that thy will be mine. And then he was sure that dying of his body was the will of his father. Likewise, one Mother Teresa also asked me this question, that even though I lived with some doubts in my mind, I never wavered from my sadhana in our language. So, should we get discouraged if once in a while we end up with really tiny doubts of our firmness in Krishna consciousness? Should we not be patient enough and tolerant enough to expect this as part of the process, that there should not be ever any excuse for us to waver from our path, even by the salvation? I just wanted to answer.
The question is that the relationship between doubts and our steadiness on this path. Yes, this is an age of doubt. The whole propaganda machine in the world today is simply sowing the seeds of doubt in the minds of people. The propaganda today is the senses are everything, satisfaction of the senses is everything, and reality is what the senses perceive and nothing more. Whereas the reality according to the Shastra is completely different. It doesn't necessarily match with the reality that our senses perceive. So there is a gap, and that gap is what causes doubt in the mind of a person who doesn't have sufficient faith in the scriptures. Of course, it's a long subject, and there are so many nice verses Krishna quotes about how faith is essential. Ashraddhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apraptimam nivartante mrityu samsar mani. That if one is faithless on this part of dharma, one has to come back to this mrityu sansara vartmani, the path of the birth and death cycle, one has to come back. So faith is essential. Sometimes, however, because of the influence of the polluted environment, some doubts, even if they creep in, then two things must be done. The first, to try to settle those doubts. Jnana asinatmanah, jnana asina. Asina means the weapon or sword. As Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, by the weapon of knowledge, one should destroy the demons of doubt. So one should acquire the proper spiritual understanding by which these doubts can be destroyed. Yat anudhyasina yuktah karma granthi nibandhanam. So the Bhagavatam also said, anudhya asina. The process of hearing and chanting about the Lord also is like a weapon that destroys all the misgivings and doubts that may come in the heart of the conditioned soul. So doubts, yes, they will come because it is natural for the conditioned living entity. But simply by following the process, eventually these doubts will go away. By good association and by following the practices that are outlined to us by Srila Prabhupada, which is perfect, all these doubts will eventually disappear. One should simply go on and on, steadily persevering. Just simply do the prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness of chanting the holy name and so many other services that we are asked to do. Eventually, we shall be victorious over the enemies of illusion and doubt and attain success. Okay, so we will stop here. It's time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.